Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Welcome back, everyone, to another podcast episode. My name is Ella Hooper, and I'm excited to talk about a topic today that I've been teaching on for nearly 9 years. And have been probably learning the concept maybe 10 years. And I'm still growing and learning in this topic. And I really enjoy teaching it. And that is the topic of self-compassion. And I think that like part of healing is actually learning this concept of compassion. I don't know how I would have actually gone through healing in certain areas if I didn't know about this concept. So I think it's such an important one to kick off the year kind of talking about and jumping into. And I'm going to share, first of all, what I've learned from actually teaching this to people so that this might be helpful to you. In listening to it, this is like a really big, nuanced topic that kind of requires wrestling out, hashing out ideas, working it through with a therapist or a life coach, and like actually experiencing it. It's not a topic where you kind of hear the concept and then you're done and dusted and you don't need to listen to it again. It is one of those ones that you need to hear it from multiple and different people. And so I'm going to be actually pulling a lot of what I've learned, and then I've experimented with it for the past 8 or 9 years. I've watched clients and students and people in my life like try and integrate compassion into their life. And so I'm going to today really talk about what are the ingredients of self-compassion. I'm going to share some personal stories. And a little side note to the personal stories, you'll notice this on my podcast. I actually share pretty, like to some of you, they feel might feel like oversharing or vulnerable. To me, they're actually transparent. Like to me, sharing some of the stories, they're often stories that I don't struggle with anymore, or maybe I do, but I don't care if you guys know that I'm a human. Like I'm totally fine with that. But I share stories for a purpose. So it's not like I'm just oversharing my life. I'm actually sharing them to invite you into something. And when we share stories, we actually connect with common humanity, that we're not alone in our struggle. So I like to highlight an insecurity that I've had or an issue that I've had, because I'm trying to like go, hey, you can actually tell me about yours. You could actually be human with me as well. And so that's the purpose behind that. So I just wanted to give that side note of why I share personal stories. And so it's got a lot more thought to it than just like, I'm just sharing information. Anyway, so I'm going to share personal stories. I'm going to share the research behind it. And then I'm also going to share the pitfalls and some objections to why people struggle with this topic so much. And then I might go into like a little bit of the theology around it. One thing to note is that I actually see clients from all walks of life and all backgrounds, religions, agnostic, atheist, people that believe in a higher power, and people that are Christians. And if you have listened to my podcast for long enough, you know that faith is central to my story. Just wanted to comment on that. If by the time we get to the little bit of theology that I bring at the end, that's just for people with Christian faith. And so when I teach this, and I'll just like let you know, like a lot of people actually shut down and aren't able to hear it. So sometimes like you can find yourself like, oh, I'm disengaging. Like and sometimes that's like, I can learn how to be a better communicator. But part of it is also because self-compassion is actually really connected to processing pain. So our brain has a pain cycle. And so when we go through something painful, we need to close up the loop. And compassion is the way that we heal and close out that pain cycle. And so I like to view compassion like a midwife that is bringing nurture and comfort and kindness as you deliver your baby, as you deliver, get delivered from your painful experience. And so for me, this has been the greatest secret weapon. It's kind of like my secret sauce to like why so many people come to coaching for me, because this is my little tool. This is my thing that really unlocks breakthrough in people's life. And I think there's resistance to self-compassion is because some of us are just not ready to focus on healing pain in our life, and we're talking about pain. And so sometimes when we're talking about pain, people shut down or there's crickets and we're like, why, you know? And then if you're a person of faith, like, let's focus more on God. Why are we talking about ourselves? And, you know, I've heard it all. But the thing is, what I've learned about spirituality is the more I'm connected to myself, the more I connect to God. And when I'm disconnected from myself, the less I can access God and connect to God. And not to say that like God doesn't crash into my life and like connect with me when I feel like disconnected. I'm not saying that. But when you know yourself, you will unlock so much more in your faith and your spirituality. So in saying that, I think the resistance is sometimes because it's like there's this really toxic version of self-love message that's out there that becomes more selfish. And when people are going on a healing journey, they will pendulum swing in their journey. They will go from one extreme to the other. Let's say they're extremely nasty to themselves. They're very critical. They'll go from that extreme and they'll pendulum swing back to, oh, it's fine. Like, don't even worry about it. Have compassion on yourself. And I think when I first started teaching this, I would notice like, my students really didn't get it. And this is where I was like growing in teaching it, or even understanding the journey of how someone will clunkily try and apply this message to their life is like they'll go into this place of like, you know, self-love, like eat that tub of ice cream, like don't show up to class, like it's self-compassion. Like, and that's not what self-compassion is. It's actually more an internal voice to yourself. And so really what self-compassion is relating to yourself and connecting to yourself in a kind way. And what I believe is that kindness is potent. Kindness leads us to repentance and transformation. And it also creates safety. And so in a harsh world where there's so many violent voices and so many critical voices and so many voices telling us where we've failed and where we need to do better, and we're kind of like really tethered to that voice because in some ways it does make us, you know, do things and achieve things, and that voice does move us forward in some ways. Like the idea of compassion coming into your life and kindness coming into your life, that actually leads to the most transformation. And so there's such a resistance to it because it's almost like the analogy that I've heard one of my mentors say is like we're in a marriage with shame, and we're in this toxic relationship where we're like, shame makes me better. And when I, you know, if I hate myself enough, I'll get off the couch and go work out and I'll do these things and it'll motivate me because I'd never want to feel that bad thing. So I'm going to work really hard and I'm going to willpower my way. And like, there's this kind of intensity and striving and self-criticism that's like forcing you to be better. And it's like we're in a marriage with that and we don't know how to be motivated with life if we don't have it. And then you go on a healing journey and it's like you get a taste of love. Like what ideally you're wanting to do is get out of that marriage, divorce that marriage with shame and get into a relationship with love. That is, love is patient. It doesn't keep a record of wrongs. Shame will always keep a record of your wrongs and remind you and accuse you. And it's getting out of relationship with that accusing voice. I was so in a relationship with an accusing voice because I thought it would make me better. And I thought, if I didn't have that voice, how am I going to be a good person? And so it was such a journey. And you know, like a lot of breakups, you break up and get back together. So you break up with shame and then you get back together with shame, thinking like, actually, you do help me. I'm going to like connect with that voice. And then finally you divorce that voice. And my mentor, he says, like, divorces are obviously like hard and messy and complicated and nuanced and complex. And so that's what it's like getting out of a relationship with the voice of accusation and shame and getting into a voice of love, and getting into a relationship with a voice of love and compassion. And we have to start by understanding this concept of self-compassion. People understand, like, I know when my friend loves me or my parents love me or my leader, like someone in my life loves me, but so we get that concept and we get the concept of like, well, God loves me, yes, but we don't understand what it means to love ourselves because a lot of the time we've had it poorly modeled, but then we just don't have language for it. And so how I would describe it is that, like, you're the gatekeeper of love in your life. So if you decide that something's not lovable about you, you will not let love into that place. So no matter how much God, who his name is love, like God is love, tries to get into those places, you've already decided and you made an agreement that love could not get into that place to heal it, transform it, and bring you into wholeness. And so it's the same in a relationship. If someone is telling you you're beautiful, you're beautiful, you're beautiful, but then you don't believe it, you have shut out that love in your life. And so part of like going on the journey of bringing self-compassion into your life is actually opening up the gates to let love in. And you have to open those gates. And so you have a relationship with yourself. It isn't a humanistic kind of concept. You are in a relationship with yourself. Like, one of the fruits of the spirit is self-control. You can't have self-control of like not eating those donuts if you do not know yourself. You have to understand yourself. You have to understand your backstory. You have to understand what triggers you, what emotion, what's happening in your emotional world, and just making sense of your story, making sense of who you are, what you like and what you don't like. And we can walk through life really kind of in a place of self-abandonment. And self-abandonment has shown up in my life where I'm not taking care of my body. I'm not eating healthy. I'm not, working out consistently, or, you know, like we abandon ourselves in relationship where we put everyone else first, but we don't know how to actually take care of ourselves. We do this in boundaries. We let people violate our boundaries because we don't think that we're valuable and precious enough to have a sense of boundaries and a sense of self and autonomy and a sense of self. So really, like, it's really challenging to kind of connect to this idea initially if you're like new to emotional health world. And so when I realized, like, oh, life isn't happening to me, I can have a sense of identity and self, and I can actually have power over my thought life and the way that I talk to myself. So often we like, I think a lot of Christians would be like, the enemy, the enemy, the enemy. But what if the enemy is actually maybe you? What if you've come into agreement? What if you are the one that's talking to yourself that badly? And so, not that I don't believe in like principalities and like demonic forces that speak to us, but I also think like we have God's voice, we have our voice, we have our parents' voice, and we have the demonic that are often speaking to us. And so we like, as I think sometimes as a believer, like a Christian, will blame everything of the devil. And I don't like to give the devil that much credit. I like to take ownership of like, actually, I've come into agreement. I've chosen to speak to myself this way. And sometimes like I am talking to people and sometimes they're like, yeah, I don't think my parents said that to me or did that to me, or I don't think they spoke to me like this, but I've internalized a voice that is accusing and I've internalized this voice. And so it's recognizing like, oh, I'm constantly talking to myself. And there's about 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts that we have in a day. And how many of those are from our core woundings, which I spoke about in a previous episode, that are constantly being reinforced and repeated in our day-to-day life. And they're basically wearing us down. And so that's when we get into like anxiety and depression, because we have this internal voice, or whether it's like culturally, like where we've observed like you have to have this by this age. Like that could be a rule that you're judging yourself with. And like when we're constantly beating ourselves up over that, like that's when we go into depression. That's when we go into anxiety, because we're not relating to ourselves in a compassionate and kind way. And we're often like using the lens of fear and scarcity to kind of make sure that we never put a foot wrong, so that we're never put in a position where we experience pain. But the thing is, like, we live in a fallen world and there are trials and tribulations. Like, we experience hard things in our life. And I used to live in fear of that. But I think since learning about self-compassion, I have actually learned to be unafraid of pain. I'm unafraid of discomfort because I'm on my own team. I'm a soft place for myself to land when I take a risk. I've really learned how to really like the woman in the mirror. And that has been a journey. And sometimes like I fall out of that. Like I think that it's a practice. But I'm going to dig into, so some of the, where I have learned this is from an amazing author. She's a marriage and family licensed therapist. Her name's Andy Kobler, and she has a book called Try Softer, and she's amazing. And then I've learned from Kristen Neff, who is a researcher, and she found from her research that when people feel better about themselves, they make better choices. And that was such a mindset like shift for me of like, you mean when I'm kind to myself or forgive myself, like I'm actually going to show up better and break cycles of self-sabotage and pain in my life. So that was really amazing to kind of learn that. And then Justin and Abby Stumble have a course called The Compassion Project, which is really great that you can, actually haven't finished that one, but that's amazing. And then there's Dr. Gabor Mate and Dr. Carl D. Lemon, I think his name is. Like he talks about compassion as well. And Dr. Brené Brown talks about compassion, but she generally references a lot of Kristen Neff's research. To go into the research, like if you, and this is like being done from like so many interviews and research over the years. So basically the road to self-hatred, it's a strong word, is we have often self-criticism, like a lot of a critical voice constantly giving ourselves a good telling off. And then what that does is it makes us want to isolate. We're the only person going through this. Like no one else is suffering the same way. We go into this isolated place, like I want to withdraw from people because no one gets it. And then we'll usually go into overthinking where we are constantly trying to, like, if we're really triggered, we're trying to put out fires and try and solve, and we're overthinking all the ways that we can solve this issue about ourselves. So if you say you are struggling with your weight and you're like, oh, my internal dialogue is like, you've got the worst body ever. No one's ever going to love you. You're terrible. Like you know, fall off the gym bandwagon all the time and don't do that again. And then we isolate ourselves like, oh, I'm not going to go out in public because then I'll be seen because, you know, I don't want people to see me like this because I want to lose weight. And I am making up this on the spot, by the way. And then we go into overthinking, like, well, I'm going to research all the YouTube talks out there that talk about losing weight, and I'm going to do better, and I'm going to be in that, you know, this is what's going to motivate me to do better. And so overthinking, when we're in overthinking for anything in life, we do this with finances. We get a bill come in, we criticize ourselves because we spent money on the things we shouldn't have done. And then we go into isolation of like, I need to fix this by myself. I can't involve any help or any input from anyone. And then we go into overthinking, like maybe if I get a second job, maybe if I do this. And that is a cycle of self-hatred. As like alarming as that is to hear, if you're hearing this kind of concept for the first time, that's like pretty rough to think like that's so violent, that's so hard. But that's sometimes how we're talking to ourselves. It's so awful. And we would never talk to that, so a friend like that. I mean, some of you would, and some people do talk like that. But we wonder why we have like such violence in the world is because people are experiencing so much war inside themselves. And so when we can actually pay attention to our thoughts and recognizing like, oh, I'm in this loop where I'm like trying to fix myself and isolating myself and being super critical, that is a sign that we need more compassion. So the opposite of that, what self-compassion is instead of self-criticism, you have self-kindness. So self-kindness is talking to yourself like you would a friend. And it's being compassionate, like, oh, I totally see why you would have done that because of X, Y, and Z. Like that's, I can see how you've come to this position that you find yourself in. That's really hard. Acknowledgement is a big thing. Like validation is a big ingredient to self-compassion. So some kindness, like, oh, that's rough. That's painful. I'm sorry that this has happened. And then you'll go into common humanity of like, wow. And this is coming back to my earlier point of why I share some of the stories I share, is I'm wanting to invite you into a common humanity because too many leaders and experts out there are not modeling humanity that we all need, like, and why I believe like in the gospel message is like, I need a savior. Like I'm a human. I need help, you know? And so with kindness is like, oh, I need to connect with like, I'm not alone with this. I'm going to actually invite people into my situation to get help. And asking for help, man, that's a whole podcast topic. So I won't fully go into it, but there's something beautiful on like, receiving help and being a part of community and being in like connected as a body. And then we go into what Kristen Neff, like she uses the term mindfulness. And I know a lot of woo-woo people who don't like woo-woo or whatever are like, mindfulness, it's not okay. But what it actually means is to pay attention. And so when you paying attention is when you're in a focused state of a contemplative state. So where you're in a higher way of thinking, a more creative way of thinking. And when we get to this place, we actually get to the place of creativity and ideas come in, whether it's we're faced with a problem or a mistake, and we actually become more solution-oriented. And we actually become more accountable because we're not afraid of admitting mistakes if we've made a mistake, or we're able to actually hold space if we're in conflict with another person because we're not constantly in self-protection trying to protect our identity. The ingredients that make up self-compassion is attunement, patience, and kindness. So Dr. Carl D. Lemon says that attunement is you perceive that I see you and correctly understand your internal emotional experience, and I'm glad to be with you. And I think that that is the significant piece, is that I'm happy to be with you in this moment. A lot of pain in our life is often around the abandonment or feeling alone in a situation.
And so what attunement does is connection. It brings connection, and connection can be the most, it can be if you go through something traumatic and there was no connection there, often the wound is greater. But if you are met in that traumatic experience with compassion, people coming around you and attunement, there'll be a quicker recovery time. And so really, like, that is what I mean when there's potency to the power of self-compassion, is because of the attunement piece. When we're abandoned and alone, it can create some pretty painful identity statements in that moment. I love this thought of, like, I'm happy to be with you in this. I'm not going to rush you along. And often when we're in conflict, we're not very good at attuning, and I've had to really grow in this. Often we'll come in with advice with someone, or we'll try and like help them see the silver lining or how it's going to work out. And we try and give them positive sort of affirmations or prophetic words. But really what the person often needs in a place of pain is, I'm with you and this sucks. And so doing it for yourself looks more just like getting present with yourself and getting present and acknowledging. Part of attunement is an acknowledgement of, this is what you're going through, rather than not acknowledging what you're going through. How many of you have been in pain because someone didn't acknowledge you at work, or your family member didn't acknowledge you, or acknowledge that cost you a lot, or that meant something to you? And when we don't acknowledge people, we create disconnection. And so we are the same with ourselves. Like, when we don't acknowledge and validate an experience within ourselves, we can create that chasm in our souls. A really good parent. So a really good parent that's regulated and healthy emotionally, and not perfect, but shows up for their kids and creates structure and boundaries. And instead of like saying, hey, just come home and I'm not going to be there, and eat whatever you want and go to bed at whatever hour, like, that is not compassion. That's passivity. And often, I think in my early days, I found that I confused the two. I thought that being compassionate was kind of being passive, or I kind of had a negative view of compassion because I thought that it would be letting you off the hook, or you actually don't show up and you don't become or meet your potential. But when you view compassion as a really good parent who, when you come home from school, you have boundaries and you have maybe an hour of playtime outside and then an hour of homework and 20 minutes of screen time and then dinner and brushing your teeth and going to bed at a reasonable hour so that you're not overtired. If you view compassion as someone who is really nurturing but has structure and boundaries and limitations and is like a guide, that is the best way to view self-compassion. So even in forming habits of making your bed and going to the gym and exercising, and if we took a compassionate approach towards ourselves and a nurturing approach, we would actually have boundaries with ourselves even as adults of, like, I'm not going to binge watch a million TV shows. I'm not going to scroll and stream, be on Instagram for hours. And like, when we can kind of become that kind parent to ourselves, that's a sign of reparenting. Sometimes people can really struggle with the word compassion. And another word that would be also an ingredient of compassion is understanding. I think a lot of us have had so many painful experiences where we feel misunderstood. And what compassion is showing a lot of empathy and understanding for your situation. And so when you feel deeply understood, you start to feel known and seen. And I know when I'm working with people who maybe have a lot of pain around being misunderstood, if I take the time to deeply understand them and take time with them, that usually heals the wound of other people's pain, because then they're feeling seen and witnessed. And often the conclusions they've maybe made about themselves, they actually arrive at a better conclusion because they feel seen and understood. So one time I was teaching this class and the person in the class really couldn't understand this concept of self-compassion. She's just like blank staring at me. And then I asked the question, who's someone that you admire or maybe an authority figure in your life that you're just waiting for them to say this thing to you? And then it would actually make you feel better. And they really, like, tears came to their eyes because they realized, like, oh, if this person in my life acknowledged this or saw this in me or validated this in me, then I would feel a sense of completion or a sense of peace because I'm okay because they've validated this thing in my life. And I loved their honesty and vulnerability. But it's actually what self-compassion is you taking the authority back and connecting with, like, what do I think about me? And really getting the power back from our leaders and our bosses and people around us. And not that we don't need it at all, because I think there's a healthy need that we have to get acknowledgement and attention and affirmation from people around us. But what if you were your biggest cheerleader? What if you were on your own team and actually you started having such a strong sense of self that your own sense of encouragement towards yourself was louder and more significant than the people? Maybe is when I can uncover, like, I'm really needing this person to acknowledge me or see me. And then I go on a journey of, like, how would I see myself like that? How about I actually give myself that gift that I'm looking for from someone else? And then what's beautiful is when you can affirm that in yourself, all of a sudden people start giving you that compliment because you're embodying it more. You're coming into agreement with the thing that you're looking for. And so people actually feel drawn to give you compliments. They're drawn to actually identify the thing that you've already seen in yourself. So jumping into objections, there's probably not enough time to really unpack all the nuances of all the objections about self-compassion that I've heard over the years. But I think I'm going to hit the main one that takes a lot of unpacking, so I won't fully go into it today. And it's really, like, so specific to the people I'm talking in the room. But the biggest reason why there can be so much resistance to self-compassion is because they're afraid of if... And self-compassion, like, also feels like self-forgiveness or, showing kindness to yourself through forgiveness. A lot of people can kind of have a grid for, oh, God forgives me, or maybe my spouse or friend maybe forgives me, but self-forgiveness can be one of the biggest and hardest things to actually do for ourselves. And a big thing that people will say is that they don't want to forgive themselves for this particular thing, or they don't want to show grace for themselves because they're afraid that they're morally condoning bad behavior. And this is really fair, because if we have done something in our past that we, whether it's cheating on someone or, I don't know, any sort of failure in the past and showing compassion on that, there can be such a resistance because there is such an abuse of grace and there is such a passivity in knowing how to, like, actually hold people accountable. And there's a lot of really terrible crimes and terrible things that are happening in the world. And so if I have compassion on myself for this, am I condoning bad behavior? And the answer is no. And it really, like, and you can probably understand why it's like such a nuanced topic, and probably not, I'm not going to be able to do this answer justice on this podcast. But usually, like, when you go on a healing journey, you start to realize everything makes sense. So when we don't fully understand trauma and why people are the way they are and why people make terrible, painful decisions, it's usually because of something in their past. And it's not an excuse, but it is a reason. So when we can connect to compassion and forgiveness, we actually receive mercy. And the thing that is an interesting one here, because I've seen people kind of do self-compassion, but you actually do feel remorse, and it's not like, oh, don't feel any negative feelings, just feel compassion for yourself, even though you blew up someone else's life and you'd made a whole mess. Like, that's not the point. Usually there's kind of a process that you go through. And like I mentioned at the start of the episode, our brain needs to go through a pain cycle. And so when I experience shame, that's like a good sign that you are not a narcissist. You show remorse for what you caused. But the problem is, if we stay there, when we stay in that remorse, we actually perpetuate even more damage. But it's the people who get, when we have these moments of like life blowing up, when those people actually do the work and do the looking into their history and looking into their patterning and go to therapy and start getting help, or whether it's they go to, you know, rehab or look into their addiction, when people actually do that deeper work, often I notice they're way more whole than the perfect person, like the person that does no wrong and is quite self-righteous. Like, often they walk in a level of wholeness that is so embodied because they've actually done so much inner healing to get to that place. And often the most healed people, and to see self-compassion through, there's usually the feeling of all the pain, the acknowledgement of all the pain, and the acknowledgement of how this has affected other people, and getting perspective on the situation of like what happened. And often people blow up their lives when they're in survival mode, when there's been trauma, then there's been these experiences. And so part of like having compassion is really being like a midwife that walks you through that painful journey and delivers you into a place of wholeness. So if you're someone that's really struggling right now, who's gone through a lot of pain, and it doesn't mean, you might be like, I haven't actually done anything crazy or done anything immoral, but I just battle with such self-criticism. And the thing is, what I've noticed is that compassion is the greatest shame resilience. And so once we learn to heal from shame, we become freer and freer from shame, and we become more shame resilient, which means we have more ownership over our faults and willing to take responsibility. And so the other side of this, if we don't have compassion on ourselves, is that usually a lot of people will go into greater levels of self-hatred, of taking on responsibility of, oh, it's all my fault, it's all bad, I'm the bad one. And or the person will go into hiding, or they just won't progress in life, or they become even more narcissistic because they don't know how to process the emotions of the situation. So those are my thoughts on that. And as I mentioned, there are many objections to self-compassion. And I think that scenario that I just put forward kind of gives you an understanding of why it's something to be wrestled through. And so if you're listening to this and whatever you're feeling, even to start to take notice of how talking about compassion feels in your body, how it feels to your nervous system, start taking notice of your internal dialogue, like how you talk to yourself. And the best place that I've experienced compassion is not by myself first. Like, I gave you a lot of language today that could be your self-talk with self-compassion, but it's going to bounce off you until you have an experience with someone. And so for me, it actually didn't really, it kind of happened from friends who were learning about self-compassion. So they had like this generosity and ability to like hold space for me that was unique. And I noticed like Laura Duncan, she talks a lot on self-compassion. She says, out of my abundance of me, I can hold space for you. So when we feel abundant in self-compassion, we actually create safety for people around us and it becomes a very generous experience. So when we have that happen, people around us, like it's something that you need to experience from other people. So I probably experienced most of this, some kind of from friends, but in a deeper way in a coaching session and multiple coaching sessions and counseling, because those places were where I was the most raw. And when you are in that raw space, that really tender space and kindness comes in and gentleness, or even it's just a compassionate witness to your experience, there's something so deeply soothing in that exchange that actually helps you be able to have that for yourself. So you could listen to all the affirmations on how to be kind to yourself and have better self-talk or have your declarations there. But there's something beautiful about being in, whether it's counseling or coaching, and being in a moment where there is literally like a palpable exchange that feels like presence coming into your place of weakness, especially in your place of weakness or pain, where you feel attuned to. And so when you have multiple experiences like that, you can't help but give that to other people. I talk to my clients quite a lot about this example. When I came back to Australia, I found out I was vitamin D deficient. And at first I didn't really know what was happening with me. Like, and then you kind of go into fear of like, do I have some big medical thing that I'm going to find out? And as soon as the doctor said, oh, you're just vitamin D deficient, go take these pills, like everything started improving. And so it's kind of like that with self-compassion. So you might feel like you're triggered and you're spiraling and you're all over the place. And then once you kind of get dosages of self-compassion, it's like the test tube. Like if you're on empty and you're compassion deficient, you're going to feel snarky and critical and hard on yourself. And then once you start encountering compassion, it starts topping up and you start feeling more whole. And I think this is one of the researchers on self-compassion. She talks about how Jesus is a kind witness to our life. He views our life through so much kindness, and he doesn't have expectations on us like the world has expectations on us or like we have expectations on us. And he views our life through a non-distorted lens. Like you and I, or people around us, we all have judgments. We all have a lens for the way that we judge people of whether they're doing something right or wrong. Whereas like the way that Jesus, way that God views you is a higher perspective. And even in the Bible, the first description of how God describes himself is compassionate in Exodus. And it's the most quoted scripture by the Bible when referring to himself. And Jesus was sent to the world to take us out of our darkness. And that is what compassion is. And the Latin word for compassion is compate, which means to take out of. So when compassion is modeled correctly, it will take you out of suffering. And coming back to the reference of compassion being like a really good parent, it is also how God describes, like, the word compassion in the Bible is from the Hebrew word of rachum. And when that word is referenced throughout the Bible, it's referencing God as a compassionate parent. And so we can all have many ideas of parents out there, but I think God is the best parent there is, like a really good one. And so when we view that, because I think a lot of Christians can have some big theological blocks around self-compassion, but when you realize, like, God describes himself as that, then you can go on a journey of really reshaping maybe your theological view of God and of yourself. Anyway, if you're interested in life coaching and getting some, talking to me about self-compassion, you can always book in a life coaching call. But yeah, hopefully this podcast has been enlightening or given you something to think about. And make sure you take care.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.